Okay, so you're listening to Indie Bay Radio, and as I mentioned, let's see, let's find something neato, keno to play here. We were lucky enough to get any number of different famous enemy. Okay, so.
This conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Sarah Craven. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Craven. On behalf of UNFPA, the United Nations Population Fund, I would like to welcome you to this afternoon's audio news conference on the release of the 2005 State of the World Population Report, The Promise of Equality, Gender Equity, Reproductive Health, and the Millennium Development Goals. This year's report calls upon world leaders to fulfill promises made to the world's women and young people in order to meet poverty reduction goals agreed to at the 2000 Millennium Summit and reaffirmed by last month's World Summit in New York. Investing in women and young people who constitute the majority of the world's population will accelerate long-term development. Failure to do so may entrench poverty for generations to come. Our first speaker is Thuraya Obaid, Executive Director of UNFPA, the United Nations Population Fund, the world's largest multilateral source of population assistance. Ms. Obaid was appointed head of UNFPA effective 1 January 2001 with the rank of Undersecretary General of the United Nations. She is the first Saudi Arabian to head a United Nations agency. Ms. Obaid?
Thank you, Sarah. The State of the World Population that was launched today has about three main simple messages for the world to hear. The first one is the fact that last month the United Nations World Summit has met and world leaders have agreed to make poverty history. And the report says to make poverty history, it means we have to make gender discrimination history as well, because progress for women is progress for all. And the report goes on to say that when women are educated, healthy, and employed, and are able to make decisions about the childbearing, the number and spacing of the children, everyone benefits, the individual, the family, the community, and, of course, the nation. The report also says that investing in women and young people and reproductive health is the smartest investment that any country can make, both for the short and the long term. And finally, it says there is a very modest price tag that we can put to make poverty history. We're talking about $200 billion annually in order to bring people out of poverty and to be able to live a decent and exercise the right to a decent life. This is basically the messages that come out in the report.
Thank you, Thuraya. We will now hear from Representative Carolyn B. Maloney. Representative Carolyn Maloney represents the 14th District of New York City. She serves on the House Financial Services Committee, the Government Reform Committee, and is the ranking House Democrat on the Joint Economic Committee. Representative Maloney has fought vigorously to restore the United States contribution to UNFPA since it was first withheld by the United States in 2002. Congresswoman Maloney?
Well, thank you very much, and thank you, UNFPA, for this critical information in this report. And there's so much new evidence that confirms what we all have been saying for a long time, that investment in meeting the needs of women is really the key to overcoming poverty and achieving economic development. And we see over and over again in this report that we must make gender discrimination history if we are to make poverty history. And that is a message that the world leaders are beginning to understand at the World Summit last month in my congressional district. They came forward and finally agreed on some things, including one new target. They said universal reproductive health care will have to be achieved before the Millennium Development Goals can be met. And that shows that they understand the numbers that are in this report with reproductive health problems, including HIV/AIDS. These are the leading cause of death for women of childbearing age worldwide. And when young women are deprived of health care, when they're kept out of school to be married off at young ages, they lose any chance for their creativity to blossom and contribute to their country's progress. And I must say that when they are trapped in a vicious cycle, they're trapped in a never-ending cycle of poverty. And the very important recommendations in this report call for policy changes in every country, including the United States. And I would say that that's one reason why I have introduced legislation in Congress that would restore U.S. funding to UNFPA, because it is one agency that works in 146 countries worldwide to provide reproductive health care information and services. My bill, H.R. 2811, would provide $34 million to UNFPA to use exclusively against obstetric fistula during this fiscal year and hereafter, and it would allow some important work against this terrible problem, and it would be a small step toward the goal of universal health care. And I am delighted to be here and in support of this report, and I am proud to endorse its goals.
Thank you very much, Congresswoman Maloney. Our final speaker is Timothy Wirth, President of United Nations Foundation and Better World Fund. Tim Wirth began his political career as a White House fellow under President Lyndon Johnson. He represented Colorado's 2nd Congressional District from 1975 to 1987. In 1987, he was elected to the U.S. Senate, where he focused on environmental issues, especially global climate change and population stabilization. Following those two decades of elected politics, Senator Wirth served in the U.S. Department of State as the first Undersecretary for Global Affairs from 1993 to 1997. Senator Wirth?
Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to join Dr. Obeid and Congresswoman Maloney, who both have been such outspoken and clear leaders on this important issue. The World Summit, which just completed at the UN, as Carol Maloney pointed out, joined almost every nation in a renewed commitment to achieve universal access to reproductive health services by 2015. Most of the world is deeply committed both to this goal of universal access and to the Millennium Development Goals. Unfortunately, the performance of the United States of America maintains a very ambiguous picture. As we will remember, the U.S. ambassador to the UN attempted to remove all references to the Millennium Development Goals, the agreed-upon international standard, and it was only the intervention by the President of the United States that made sure that these goals were back in the agreed package at the UN. President Bush gave a very fine speech at the UN talking about the importance of international cooperation and the role of the UN, but unfortunately, very soon thereafter, the President appointed a completely unqualified individual, Alan Sauerbrey, to run this extremely important program for the United States. So it's clear that the United States remains ambiguous and maybe a little bit confused about what its own message is. It's important that the American public understand this. It's important that the American public demand a very clear commitment to universal access to reproductive health care services. That's on the broad scale. On a very specific scale, there are a number of things that individuals can do. Carolyn Maloney spoke about the important efforts related to fistula. She has introduced legislation on that front. We at the UN Foundation have been working with Dr. Obeid and UNFPA's campaign to end fistula, the one-by-one program which allows individuals across the country to help support the terrible situation related to fistula and the to help young women who have been damaged so dramatically to have the surgery that's necessary to restore their lives. Secondly, individuals can get involved with UNFPA in the 34 Million Friends campaign. That's a campaign that began by individuals to replace the $34 million that the U.S. has very unhappily not committed to these issues around the world. So individuals in the United States should know, you know, what the U.S. government is doing and not doing on this front, how ambiguous and conflicted the signals are, and individuals should know that there's a great deal that they as individuals can do, specifically focused on 34 million friends of UNFPA and on the one-by-one campaign to end fistula.
Thank you very much, Senator Wirth. We are now going to open the lines to questions, and I'm going to turn this over to our conference coordinator.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically.
you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone to ask a question, and we'll pause for a moment to assemble the queue. And our first question will come from Daniel Simpson with Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
My question is there any way to get from the G-8 debt forgiveness measure to UNFPA? I will confess to not seeing quite how you can do that, but is there any intention to try to get the governments that benefit from the G-8 to respond to some of the problems that UNFPA signals?
Well, this is Tim Wirth. I think it's,
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good. How are you, Dan? Okay. I think it's fair to say that this whole debt forgiveness operation allows a number of countries to focus their own resources on the very necessary area of universal access to reproductive health. That does not spill over, however, into the U.S. commitment. The United States government, you know, has under the Congress has said that it wants to spend this $34 million on UNFPA, and the administration has refused to spend the money. Their debt forgiveness does not help that at all. What's needed is just simply the administration to say that they believe their own rhetoric and to get the administration to fund UNFPA and to fund the spirit of universal access to reproductive health care services.
Thanks.
I would say that the debt forgiveness program is a tremendously important one. And as Tim said, it will release resources so that some of these countries can provide the needed health care and education. But they are the world's poorest countries by definition. That's why they're getting the debt forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And what I find so outrageous is that we're going into the fifth year now that Congress has spoken, and Congress has supported the United Nations Population Fund. And it gets to the White House, and they remove the money. And it makes no sense whatsoever. It's a multinational approach. Many countries are involved. They are in over 149 countries, including the world's poorest. And over 100 nations are funders or donors to the United Nations UNFPA. And the United States should be a leader, not one that is walking away from their commitment. And I find it incredibly frustrating, to say the least, to see my colleagues in the House and Senate support it, have it in the budget, and have it go to the White House. And for whatever reason, they strip it out. It's outrageous.
And to make sure everyone has an opportunity to ask a question today, please press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone at this time. And our next question will come from Renee Locke with the Boston Globe.
Thank you very much. Just a quick follow-up to what the representative just said, that the White House, for whatever reason, is refusing to allocate the money or vetoing out the money. What there must be an ostensible reason, and what efforts have there been on your behalf, you know, on your part, to address those concerns that the White House may have?
Well, Tim and actually Sarah Craven and certainly Dr. Abai can speak in more depth than I can, but they invoke this vague language from Kent Caston that says that no U.S. money should go to any organization that participates in coercive abortion or forced sterilization.
Mm-hmm.
And UNFPA does not participate in abortion and does not participate in sterilization, yet they continue to invoke it, and they use the example of China. Yet many organizations are in China, and they're not defunding them. And people have said that they had their own fact-finding mission that went over from the UK and the United States that came back and said the UNFPA was doing a wonderful job. And if anything, helping to relieve the population policies that China was putting in place. They were on the right side. And Tim, or Dr. Abad, you probably can add more to this, but it's very frustrating because it's so unfair, so wrong. And the bottom line, it's hurting women, really the world's poorest women.
Thank you, Congress Maloney. I think you have done a wonderful job of explaining exactly what's been happening. We even have shown data where the work we do in some of the provinces in China, where abortion has come down, women can have more choice of contraceptives, modern contraceptives, they have better counseling. In other words, we improved the quality of the services that are being provided to women, and bringing abortion down. And I think this is great evidence of the impact that we have done in changing the dialogue towards the rights of women to choose the number and spacing of the children. And as Congressman Maloney has said, the mission that was sent by the administration, by the U.S. administration, came out and said that we were doing good work in China and recommended that funds be released. We are in continuous dialogue with the State Department. We still hope that the U.S., that was very influential in establishing United Nations Population Fund and was a leader, and Tim Worth was there, of course, a leader in the International Conference on Population and Development, will come back and be a leader in ensuring that women's reproductive rights are protected and guaranteed.
Renee, this is just a simple political ideological statement by the White House. I mean, despite the fact that its own State Department says that no U.S. funds in China are being used for abortions, despite the fact that the Congress, the majority of the Congress, has said, let's go ahead and do this, there is a narrow group that, for its own ideological reasons, wants to withhold these funds. And the White House is simply using that for political reasons. And, to add insult to injury, they have now tried to get appointed this woman, Ellen Celebre, who shares this narrow ideological view and is as uninformed about these issues as the decisions on UNFPA coming from the White House are uninformed, political, and very dangerous.
Mm. Thank you.
And we do have a follow-up question from Daniel Simpson with Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
This is to ask the Congresswoman's comment on that the Congress accepts this. I wanted to ask, first, is it bipartisan support? And secondly, do any of the members of Congress feel strongly enough about it to really play rough? In other words, tell the administration either you do this or we are going to vote against you on this, that, and the other bill that you care about.
Well, I have not seen that type of commitment on the Republican side of the aisle. And as you know, we are, or at least I'm a Democrat, the Democrats are in the minority. And it's just been very frustrating because, as Dr. Abad pointed out, even their own experts will say that no funds are being used for abortion, that the efforts of UNFPA are helpful in bringing better family planning practices and humane practices to China. But we would have done it by now. And so there is a fierce loyalty on the other side of the aisle to their president, and
Daniel, there is. I think it's fair to say, Carolyn, there has been a majority in the Congress.
It's a majority, but I think they're pandering to the right wing faction of the Republican base. Bottom line.
But Carolyn has been able to put together a majority of Democrats and some Republicans to vote for this. There just aren't enough to put the kind of pressure on in the majority party.
Exactly.
But there are, 20 or 30 Republicans who are sympathetic to this, and probably a lot more if they didn't, feel the pressure of the hammer. Maybe there'll be less pressure now that, there's new leadership in the House.
I'd like to add something. Maybe it also shows, the United States had stopped providing funding for UNFPA, our donor base has expanded. We went from 92 countries when I took over in 2001. In 2004, we have 166 members paying, And most of them, the growth is in the developing countries. So in many ways, it's a vote of confidence that UNFPA is doing the right thing in the developing countries, and that's why they're providing little amounts, but it's a political commitment.
And I would say, Dr. Abide, that 166 countries cannot be wrong. And I am embarrassed that the United States is not part of this international effort to help the world's poorest women and families.
And once again, it's star one to ask a question today. And we'll have a question from David Grace with IndieBay.org.
Yes, good afternoon. I wanted to ask two questions. One refers to taxation with representation. Obviously, the people of the world are chipping in their money to pay for the United Nations, and the poorest are getting no representation, essentially, and no assistance or nothing for their return. Or for their contribution. I wonder if you can speak to that angle. The second part is along the same lines. The Jubilee movement has been talking about canceling the debts of various nations, and along these lines, the United States is essentially claiming that it does not have to pay for the United Nations. Is it deferring its ability to manage the same monies that are being paid in? So, in other words, is Jubilee an aspect that the United States has no right to discuss because it's mismanaging the funds that, or it's not contributing to the United Nations?
Let me take a crack at that. I think there are a couple of points there. First of all, on representation and who gets what, the vast majority of the United Nations funding comes from a handful of countries, the United States, the EU, Japan in particular. You know, and this is most of the funding for the UN and for all of the UN agencies, UNFPA, for WHO, UNICEF, the World Food Program, and so on. The beneficiaries are, for the most part, the poorest countries in the world who pay very, very small amount of the UN dues and of the UN costs, but are the vast recipients. So I'm not quite sure I understand your first question. The recipients tend to be those who have paid the least, as Carolyn has said, the poorest countries in the world, and the wealthiest countries in the world are the ones who put the money in the pot. So that's generally how the UN works, and it's, a very fair process. On the Jubilee situation, the U.S. is, the president has made statements about the importance of debt forgiveness. We're moving slowly, I think, in the international community in that direction, probably not as quickly as Carolyn might like or I might like, to see the debt forgiveness moving. But, I think we're getting to the point of relieving debt from some of the poorest countries, and let's hope that that accelerates and continues.
By the way, the Jubilee proposal of relieving the debt for the world's poorest countries has passed out of the House Financial Services Committee with strong bipartisan support, and will be passing the House soon, I'm sure.
That's great.
Maybe I can explain something, is that the United States, along with all the other nations, pay an assessed amount to the United Nations itself. So as long as they are paying up to a certain amount of their assessment, they are active members in the United Nations as a General Assembly, Security Council, and so on. However, for United Nations Population Fund and other such funds, such as UNDP, UNICEF, we are voluntary funds. So it is really the goodwill and the commitment of the government that makes a difference. And in the case of UNFPA, the fact that the United States is not paying its voluntary contribution to the United Nations Population Fund, it still is a member of our executive board, and it does participate in all discussions.
And we'll have a follow-up question from Renee Loft with Boston Globe.
Well, I was just going to ask, it's not exactly a follow-up, but for an update on the 34 Million Friends campaign, which obviously it's no substitute for a commitment from the U.S. Congress and all the American people, but it kind of, I thought, did a nice job of shaming the administration, at least initially.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to know how that's going. Is there a total dollar amount? Is it still vigorously being promoted? And what's its role today?
Brad, do you want to talk?
I'll talk a little bit, but I think you can do too. The 34 Million Friends campaign's importance is advocacy and bringing the issue in the United States into the agenda. So far, they have raised $2.6 million. It has been used for fistula because we feel this is an issue that is not controversial, an issue that brings the heart of people when you know women are suffering from fistula in many parts of the world. Certainly, it has slowed down because there were always hopes of funds being raised and so on. It will remain to be an advocacy tool in the United States. We are hoping it will pick up and provide more resources as it started. But what is important that it's becoming a steady source, though small, but it's fairly steady.
Mm-hmm. I think Thrive's got it about right. You know,
I understand.
Thrive, but there's no substitute for government commitments on this. So.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I would say also I heard that the book is coming out shortly on the whole $34 million program and how they've organized.
Yes.
And really why our government hasn't been there and why it should be there.
Okay, and once again, a final reminder, if you'd like to ask a question today, press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. And we have a follow-up question from Daniel Simpson with Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
This one follows up on Tim Wirth's reference to Ellen Sauerbrey. Does she still face confirmation in the Senate?
Yes, she does.
Because there's a place to latch on.
Well, hopefully people will focus on this issue and at a time when, I think people are really demanding competence in their government, and there's been much discussion about that in the last, over the last 3 or 4 months in particular. Let's hope that there will be a searing light placed upon this nominee. And, that is a job that we in the outside can suggest happens, but that can only be done by members of the United States Senate. And I know Carolyn will be working on that. Many outside groups are working on it to make sure that people really do understand the importance of this appointment and, how the world views this appointment and the fact that, the administration, which has had some good people in this job in the past, should continue that tradition and not bend itself to what appears to be a set of ideological and political forces that are very unfortunate and, as I said earlier, dangerous and destructive.
I would like to add something to what Tim has said. The World Summit has, for the first time, that world leaders at the level of heads of states and head of governments have said, and I'm almost quoting, we commit ourselves to universal access to reproductive health by 2015. And this commitment, to which the U.S. was a partner, they were in the World Conference, they have adopted and joined the consensus on it. I think the only comment that the U.S. made that this is not to be understood as meaning abortion. But otherwise, it has joined the consensus. So we hope that this level of commitment at the highest level of responsible officials would also allow a discussion within the United States in terms of this new commitment.
Good.
And we'll have a follow-up question from David Grace with IndyBay.org.
Yes, I just wanted to let the participants know and the reporters know that we've made an audio file of this, and if you go to our website, indiebay.org, you'll be able to find it as an audio file and get exact quotes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sarah. This is Tim Wirth. I'm going to have to duck off. Thank you very much for organizing this.
Thank you very much, Senator Wirth.
Talk to you soon. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Thrive. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Tim, and thank you, Carol.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Indy B.
Hello? And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.
Okay. I'd like to thank all of our speakers. And if anyone is still on the line and needs more information, they can go to www.unfpa.org. Thank you very much.
And that concludes the press conference. Indy Bay has been allowed to take part in these very large press conferences. The one we did yesterday apparently had 56, 57 different major press participants. So we certainly thank the developers of these conferences for including Indy Media. All right, we'll return to some of our normal programming. You are listening to Indy Bay Radio in San Francisco.